माधव कुंज बिहारी
जय
जन बल्लभा गिरिवर
धारी
यशो घनंदन व्रज जान रंजन यशोधानंदन व्रज जान रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी श्याम जय राधे श्याम राधे श्याम जय राधे जय कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम जय कृष्ण बलराम जय गौरनिधाय जय गौरनिधाय जय जय प्रभु प्रभु जय प्रभु भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं जयमुदीरयेत् Praishu Padreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishthiti. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 18th chapter, text number 46. Dharmapalo Narapati.
Dharmapalo Narapati.
Dharmapalo Narapati.
Dharmapalo Narapati.
Sathu Samrat Vihachravaha. Sathu Samrat Vihachravaha. Sakshan Mahabhagavato.
Sakshan Mahabhagavato.
Sakshan Mahabhagavato. Rajarshir Haya Medayat. Rajarshir Haya Medayat. Shutrit Shramayuto Dino. Shutrit Shramayuto Dino.
Shutrit Shramayuto Dino.
Naivashmach Japam Arhati. Naivashmach Japam Arhati. Please chant.
Dharmapalo Narapati.
Dharmapalo Narapati.
Sathu Samrat Vihachrava.
Sathu Samrat Vihachrava.
Sakshan Mahabhagavato.
Sakshan Mahabhagavato.
Rajarshir Haya Medayat.
Rajarshir Haya Medayat.
Shutrit Shramayuto Dino.
Dharmapala,
the
protector of religion.
Narapati,
the king.
Sa, he.
Tu,
but.
Samrat,
emperor.
Brihat,
highly.
Shrava, celebrated.
Sakshat,
directed.
Mahabhagavata.
The first class devotee of the Lord. Rajarishi. The saint amongst the royal order. Haya Medaya. The great performer of four sacrifices. Shoot. Hunger.
Trit.
Thirst.
Thirst.
Shrama Yuta.
Tired and fatigued.
Dina.
Stricken.
Na.
Never.
Eva.
Thus.
asmat,
bayat,
shapa,
curse,
arvati,
deserves.
Translation. The Emperor Pershit is a pious king. He is highly celebrated and is a first-class devotee of the personality of Godhead. He is a saint amongst the royalty and has performed many horse sacrifices. When such a king is tired and fatigued, being stricken with hunger and thirst, he does not at all deserve to be cursed. Purport. After explaining the general codes relating to the royal position and asserting that the king can do no wrong and therefore is never to be condemned, the sage Shamika wanted to say something about Emperor Pariksit specifically. The specific qualification of Maharaj Pariksit is summarized herein. The king, even calculated as a king only, was most celebrated as a ruler who administered the religious principles of the royal order. In the Shastras, the duties of all castes and orders of society are prescribed. All the qualities of a Kshatriya mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, 1843, were present in the person of the emperor. He was also a great devotee of the Lord and a self-realized soul. Cursing such a king when he was tired and fatigued with hunger and thirst was not at all proper. Shamika Rishi thus admitted from all sides that Maharaj Pariksit was cursed most unjustly. Although all the Brahmanas were aloof from the incident, still, through the childish action of a Brahmana boy, the whole world situation was changed. Thus, Rishi Shamika, a Brahmana, took responsibility for all deterioration of the good orders of the world. The Emperor Pariksit is a pious king. He is highly celebrated and is a first-class devotee of the personality of Godhead. He is a saint amongst royalty and has performed many horse sacrifices. When such a king is tired and fatigued, being stricken with hunger and thirst, he does not at all deserve to be cursed. So a little bit of context of this particular segment of the chapter. After Sringi released his curse out of anger, and Shamika Rishi's father came to realize what had happened, he did not take sides with his son, and he saw that this is a really terrible action that had so many great consequences, more than his son can see, and that would affect the world from here on out. So in the previous verses, he states different arguments why this curse was a bad idea. And the previous verses I was speaking on, because this curse will no longer be a great emperor in place, in the monarchical regime side of things. Without that monarchy in place that's protecting the citizens, the society falls apart. And now he's taking a different approach. He's saying, besides all of that, the emperor, Maharaj Pariksit, the pious king, and more than a pious king, he was a very great devotee. So because of this, not only have you messed with the whole monarchical regime and thrown things off course, but you offended a great personality. And because of that, he did not deserve to be cursed at all. So it ends his argument and reasoning, and it shows also the kind of heaviness and weight that Shamika Rishi is feeling, because on behalf of a boy, his father has to take the responsibility, because the boy's not old enough and not really an adult yet, that his actions are carried solely through his own, through himself. And this verse in particular is very nice in a sense because it glorifies Maharaj Pariksit, and it glorifies him very nicely. And if you look through word by word, you can see different glorifications that really bring to light his personality. It's very easy to say, so-and-so is a great devotee, he is a pious king, and leave it at that. When we understand why is he pious, why is he a great devotee, our appreciation for Maharaj Pariksit and such other devotees becomes a lot stronger. So at first it says Dharmapala, protector of religion. So some kings, they may follow Dharma. They may not follow it perfectly, they may not follow it at all, or maybe they're following it, but they're not capable of enforcing Dharma properly because they don't have the power. The Maharishi Pariksit both had the power to enforce Dharma, and he had the knowledge of what Dharma actually is. So he did that as a person. And he knew Dharma, he could enforce it. Example is stopping the personality of Kali. And Kali was coming into his kingdom, and he was so powerful, and he knew Dharma so well that he had no place for Kali in his kingdom. He told him to leave. And that exchange happens in the previous chapter, and of course Kali still does find a way to sneak in. Next word, it says Narapati. And the transliteration says, defines this as the king. But if you kind of do the literary Narapati, you get the master or the protector of the people. And what was great about Pariksit Maharaj and such pious kings is they weren't only protecting the material aspect of the people's living situation. It wasn't just that everybody was comfortable in the kingdom, which they were. Provided all the proper necessities for living and comfort. But more than that, there's two elements to a king. A proper, pious king. And when they protect the people, they protect the necessities of life, the living situations, and they protect the spiritual situations. They guide people to a higher goal. And then themselves set that example. And therefore, the kingdom, everybody in the kingdom, is following nicely. So he was Narapati in that example. It says Brihat Shivaha. He was highly celebrated, and also meaning he was respected by all. That's something quite rare, to have someone in a leadership position who is respected by everybody. And you can see that doesn't happen nowadays very much. You know, even in smaller circles and devotional communities, it's really difficult. And just that in itself shows how great of a king he was. If he was respected by everybody, he must have held a very high standard for himself and for everybody else. And so then Shamakirishi gets a little turn. Now, not only is he describing him as a pious king, he says, well, he's a great Vaishnava. Not just any Vaishnava, he's a Mahabhagavat, which is the greatest of Vaishnavas. He was a very great devotee of the Lord. And not only that, he was Sakshan Mahabhagavato, directly. Which means there's no argument. Directly a close associate, a close devotee of the Lord. And that's without doubt. And it said that Maharaj Pariksit was always searching for Krishna his whole life. He knew that Krishna saved him in his womb. He was always searching and thinking of Krishna throughout his life. And that shows that after this curse, he was so ready. He was so ready to give up his kingdom, his family, everything that he had, because he was already fixed on Krishna. And therefore, he was Sakshan Mahabhagavato. And then lastly, it says Rajarshi, Rajarishi. So, in combination, we hear his glorification of the ruler, and we hear his glorification as a devotee. And that combination is described also in the verse, who performed many horse sacrifices. So, that was the higher standard of devotional service in that age. And especially for kings to perform this is a very high act of devotional service. And so, considering all of this, he didn't deserve that. Not at all. The purport states also that he had all necessary qualities of a Kshatriya and of a saintly devotee. So it was a big mistake to curse him. And really the curse was far more intense than what was the act that Maharaj Pariksit performed. He made a small mistake, but it was a very big reaction that was undeserving. And because of that, the consequent reaction affects the whole Brahmana community. And I think that's another important point, is that something we may do is not just our consequence we may take for it. Who we represent, who is our family, who is our people, especially as devotees, we represent the Prabhupada, we represent the ISKCON community, we represent the greater Vaishnava community. So any action we may take, any reaction we may have towards a certain scenario, it doesn't just affect us. It affects a lot of other people because we're so connected in this way and we've taken shelter. So, The question, I guess, comes, why did Shrinky curse, or why did they all go down in this way? Why was Maharaj Parikshit, so to say, a victim of a curse like this, if he didn't deserve it? Why did it even happen in the first place? It's stated earlier that this is solely actually Krishna's will, and that there wasn't a really anything Maharaj Parikshit did to deserve it, but it was Krishna's will, and then it leads me to think, why was this even Krishna's will in the first place? And there's certain other pastimes that things happen, unfortunate circumstances happen to great devotees. And the reason is, one, to glorify that Vaishnava, and two is to expedite kind of the process or the lila that is taking place. And so, for example, a similar instance happened with Narad Muni and Kamsa. When the first child came to Vasudev and Devaki, Kamsa knew, okay, actually it's the eighth child that's going to come to kill me, so you keep this child, it's okay. Okay, so that's not too bad. But what happens then is Narad Muni comes to intervene, and I think, why is he coming, why is he creating more problems? Why is he creating more death in this lila? We don't need this, it's already going to come. But for him, his intent is that the mission of Krishna must be fulfilled, and this greater mission must happen. So he's coming to expedite that action. Narad Muni comes in and he says, well, they know comes with it. Each child can come at any time, really. He gives different arguments. And then the storyline continues in that way. So in a certain way, in a similar way, if this whole pastime didn't unfold, if the curse of Shrinky didn't happen, if Shrinky was a little bit more, you know, pacified with anger, we wouldn't have the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's really due to Shringi's curse and his reaction that expedited this whole process, and that we can actually be glorifying Krishna Maharaj and hearing the Bhagavatam today. It's all due actually to Shringi. So this unfortunate circumstance is really just a way to expedite the process and to glorify Maharaj Parikshit and show that by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam we can attain perfection. We can attain Krishna, the highest goal. But what I found very, very interesting in this chapter, it's a scenario that's completely run on misunderstanding. And that's something that happens all the time with all of us. There's misunderstandings and things go in a downward spiral. And the whole chapter is kind of run on that. And it's also the understanding that in the very beginning it stated, as soon as Krishna left the planet, Kali entered. As soon as that happens. Now that we know that these certain mistakes that were happening, for example, weren't always, you know, they were due to the influence of Kali, which means they were due to the modes of material nature. And there's two main characters teaching us important lessons here. There's Shringi and there's Pariksha Maharaj. We describe Pariksha Maharaj's wonderful qualities. Well, let's take a little bit of a look at Shringi. His whole storyline is that he's actually overcome by the mode of passion ignorance. He was overcome by the mode of passion because he was shown his abrupt curse. His very just reactive kind of mode. And the mode of goodness is such a good mode is to kind of be more shanti, more peaceful, to see things as they come. And the mode of passion is very much on the go. And that can be shown in this way, this abrupt curse. And ignorance based on the fact that he cursed out of anger, and he ignored the fact, the whole greatness of the king, the whole importance of having a king, everything his father told him, he ignored that entirely. And so looking at the qualities described as Shringi, there isn't a verse in this chapter that describes it. But in the Bhagavad Gita it said, Dambo darpo bimanascha prodha parushyam evacha agyanam chabijatasya bartha sampadam asudim. In the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita it stated, what are the symptoms or the qualities of a demoniac personality? And it's also stated the symptoms qualities of divine personality. So pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, krodha, anger, parushyam, harshness, and agyanam, ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Krishna. And these aren't qualities you want to possess. These are qualities you want to avoid. And the prayer for Srila Prabhupada states that in this verse, the royal road to hell is described. This is definitely not the road we want to take. But if you look at this, dumbo, pride, dharpa, ignorance, krodha, anger, parishyam, harshness, and you just hear this list, and you think of Sringi, or you think of Sringi's act, not describing him as a person, but the act that he performed, were these present in him? Which ones were present? And I think many of them were. Pride, arrogance. And it said when he was found out what happened to his father, and he was talking badly about Krishna, just like a watchdog or a crow. Like, just see my power. I will handle this business myself. The pride and arrogance was there. The anger was obviously there. He was so frustrated, he didn't stop to take a moment to think what's going to happen. But what really stands out in this verse and stands out as a demoniac quality that I didn't think of initially was parushya, harshness. And he was extremely harsh. And the curse was quite the definition of harshness. And if you compare that to Maharaj Parikshit, it's the exact opposite. In Bhagavatam it states, Tipikshvisha Purinika. And symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, he is merciful, and he is friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies, he is peaceful, he abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. So we see that, and we think of the harshness of Sringi, and we see two sides of the coin. The brahmanas, they're supposed to represent the other list, they're not supposed to represent this demoniac quality list. But as the symptom of Kali, Sringi represented the start of the degradation of the brahmana class. And so what does harshness lead to? Harshness, it leads to destruction, actually. Because when someone's harsh, they don't think through what their act is going to be. And devotees are, by nature, aren't harsh. And we're not supposed to be harsh. We're supposed to be very kind, soft, gentle. These are Vaishnava qualities. And there may be a time and place for standing up for oneself rather than Vaishnavas, which harshness may be needed, but in general, harshness is not a quality of a Vaishnava. So, when we look at Sringi and we look at ourselves, or we look at Maharaj Parikshit and look at ourselves, we can see there's two personalities, and they both made a mistake of some sort. They both exhibited some kind of misunderstanding, which is natural in this world, it's completely natural. But they both took different approaches. They both reacted in different ways. I think it's a very important lesson to see both of them and to understand their story, their characteristics, and see where do I lie? Do I lie on the side of Sringi? Am I acting with harshness? Do I lie on the side of saintliness and grace, like Maharaj Parikshit? So, how to know if we're acting like Sringi? How do I know if I've been harsh to somebody else? So there's certain characteristics that in his curse, in his act, Sringi showed that defined harshness. And the first thing that he did was that he acted impulsively. Probably also can relate to this one. Someone says something doesn't go your way, there's something that's potentially offensive or rude, and we impulsively act upon that. We immediately react. And that was the first mistake. Because when you act impulsively, you don't give yourself time to understand the information, you don't give the other person time to understand what they did wrong. So in this case, Sringi did not give himself time to understand what actually happened, what's the background here, nor did he give Maharaj Parikshit time to understand his own mistake. So the rule of thumb, which is very simple but very effective, is if you're angry, don't say anything. If you're angry, just walk away. It's very, quite simple. But when anger overcomes, frustration comes, and the destruction comes, and it's a whole downward spiral. But also when we don't act impulsively, not only does it give us a chance to understand what's going on, it gives the other person a chance to understand their mistake. And I think that's very, very important. What would have happened if Sringi calmed himself down and gave Maharaj Parikshit a chance to understand what he did, and explain himself potentially, because as soon as he put the dead snake around his neck, around the neck of the rishi, and left, the first thing he thought of was, oh, did he not ignore me? Maybe he was in trance. Maybe there was something else going on. And immediately he thought of that for himself. Actually, there's like an understanding in sort of the mental health sphere or kind of the emotion sphere is that when you're actually very, very upset or you're acting out of impulse, what it actually is in a neurological kind of way is it's not your emotion so much as it is your nervous system. From a physiological point of view, your nervous system is getting very heightened, and so therefore your blood tends to boil, so to say, you feel very upset, and there's certain characteristics that happen. Because of that, so from a physiological standpoint, even say if you act impulsively, if you're getting very upset very quickly, or your emotions seem to heighten, just take a break, take a little time out. And that's kind of the opposite of impulse. Also, Shrinky was presumptuous. He was skeptical. And I think when we have misunderstandings, that's another very important aspect, is that we see someone do something, hear someone do something, and we presume the worst of them. And we go on this kind of what's that, mouse rat wheel of just bad thoughts, of one after another. This person did this, I said that. We create false scenarios in our head. And so Shrinky did that, what we often do, prejudge or create a false preconceived notion of someone with little to no information. And we see that with what he said. He characterized Maharaj Parikshit on the rulers of the world these days, something along those lines in the earlier verse, are acting in a way that's committing sins to the Brahmin community without taking the advice of the Brahmanas. And therefore, he said, I will act in such a way as to reestablish what is right and wrong. He would take matters into his own hands, is what he said. And I think this is the common place where aparad takes place. When there's misunderstandings, and we think something poorly of someone else based on not enough information, based on presumptuousness, then aparad commonly takes place. We may think someone says something about them, and then we just have this thought of this one devotee in our head, and act with it. This is the only way they are. For us, we see them, we characterize them in a certain place. And then from that ill feeling, then becomes maybe some kind of, or ill thinking might become some kind of ill feeling. Think badly of them, and then we just feel badly about them. We don't tend to like somebody because of something we might have heard or seen them do without seeing the whole picture. And then from that ill feeling, we may act harshly. And from this way, aparad comes, and that's something we want to stay as far away from as possible. So do we choose the benefit of the doubt, or do we find faults? And that's the dilemma that Shrinky found himself in, and we might find ourselves in often, is that he chose the fault-finding route rather than the benefit of the doubt. And I think the last aspect of his harshness was that he gave a punishment much worse than the mistake that was made. It was overly harsh. He didn't see all the good that Maharaj Parikshit does, which his father later had to point out. The importance of Maharaj, of the king, the greatness of Maharaj Parikshit himself, how loving he was to all the citizens, how this was only a small mistake in a whole giant ocean of wonderful, sweet qualities. Once I was in a retreat a few years ago in England, and the topic was creating a community without envy. It was very interesting. A community without any envy was the ideal spiritual community, and that's how the spiritual world operates. There's no envy. And so we did a little exercise, and there was actually a recommendation from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When there's criticism between two devotees, there's some tension there, they don't like each other, they would bring them together in front of one another and have each devotee glorify one another. Can you imagine how hard that is? So much tension, he doesn't like him, come together and glorify one another. And of course, it wasn't a retreat full of tense people, we were just there to understand what was going on, but we all got into pairs, even with people we didn't know. And we had to find something nice to say about one another. And it was so different than what we usually do. And I remember being paired with somebody I barely knew at all. But of course I had some preconceived notion about, oh, he's like this, or he's from this place, or he hangs out with this people. And I had no idea what to say, because I had no idea who he was. So I said, oh, I saw you write something in your notebook during the notes, and I thought it was very nice. And he said something back, similar, because he didn't know me either. And it was such a sweet exchange, and all of a sudden, my idea of that person forever changed. And every time I see him, I think of something nice. So little things like this, they make such a big difference. And if we get our consciousness out of this harshness consciousness, out of this Sringi mood that he had, and bring it more to a Maharaj Parikshit, saintly, graceful, and very kind, gentle, tolerant mood, then all of a sudden, our Vaishnava qualities just erupt out of us, and we just become so overfilled with love for one another. And then bhakti can really happen. Because as soon as there's hardness in the heart, and the heart's tied into a knot, we really can't practice devotional service. And as soon as there's this anger and these demoniac qualities are present, it's very, very difficult to chant. It's very difficult to connect with Krishna in any way. So Maharaj Parikshit, he reacted to this curse very differently. He reacted to what happened. He could have counter-reacted and went back and forth in the same way, but he didn't give in to the lower state of consciousness and those demoniac qualities that Sringi was expressing. He reacted completely differently, and he reacted in a divine, sort of very Vaishnav way. So he realized immediately that Krishna had a bigger plan for him, and he took whatever happened to him as an opportunity. He took it as an opportunity and as Krishna's blessing, and I think that comes from faith. Deep faith in Krishna's plan, and really also from being situated in the mode of goodness. Immediately he gave up his family, his children, his kingdom, his attachments, his possessions, and he left to search for the sadhus. And so that shows, Sringi shows how not to act, and Pariksha Maharaj shows how to react. Because Sringi was harsh and was the most spiritual person, there was a very, very large problem that was created. But Pariksha Maharaj didn't see this as a very large problem. Personally, he took it and he saw it as the greatest blessing. So there's one particular quality that of Pariksha Maharaj that I felt was the most glorious quality. And actually, this is the quality it's the first instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's tolerance. And it's the first instruction Krishna tells Arjuna. First, when he starts speaking after Arjuna accepts him as his guru, is that he mentions a little bit about you're not this body, but then in the 14th verse, the second chapter, he states, just, O son of Bharata, just learn to tolerate, just learn to tolerate. And that was the first step. And from this tolerance came acceptance. And there are similar instances of tolerance of Vaishnavas that make them so great. Even if there is a mistake that was made in the Abhijaya and Vijaya, and their mistake was made, and they understood. Well, their scenario is a little different because they just wanted to get back to Vishnu as soon as possible. But another example which I thought was very interesting was Maharaj Chitraketu and the curse from Parvati. And so the story goes, he's flying above and he sees Lord Shiva speaking in the assembly of sages, and there's Parvati, Mother Parvati, sitting on his lap. And he was laughing, and he said something, and Lord Shiva didn't take it offensively, and because he knew the position of Lord Shiva, it wasn't the same situation as it was with Daksha, it wasn't that kind of offense to Lord Shiva, but for Mother Parvati, she was very offended. And so she cursed him. And he took it very, very well. He immediately accepted it. He understood the philosophy behind it. And he gives a few verses where he explains why he accepts it and so on and so forth. And then after Lord Shiva is speaking to Parvati, and he speaks a really wonderful verse and really a nice example of what devotees are like. He says, Narayana para sarve na kushjana bibhyati Varva Bhavarga Narakshe Apitulyartha Darshinaha. The Bodhi is solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are only interested in the service of the Lord. That was the case with Maharaj Chichiketu, Madhivachasura, and that was the case with Maharaj Parikshit and many other Vaishnavas. Like Prahlad Maharaj, through tolerance, their gloriousness was shown. And through the tolerance of Maharaj Parikshit, with something seemingly that happened to him bad, he immediately saw what the good in it was. He immediately saw how he could take advantage of it. So even though these personalities are teaching us a lesson, sometimes their scenarios seem quite extreme. And then here we have a king who was cursed to get bitten by a snake bird in 7 days. You might think, okay, my scenario is quite different. No, you're telling me to choose who to act like Sringi or to act like Parikshit Maharaj and take on his qualities. But this is a whole different scenario. But in fact, their extremeness just shows the opposite. It shows that they're able to apply, or Maharaj Parikshit is able to apply such things in such an extreme circumstance that it's easily possible for us to practice tolerance, to practice forgiveness in our own little world. If he can do it, being the emperor of the world, getting cursed to die in 7 days, then our little world that we're so attached to and stuck in, it must be so easy. Bhagavatam tells stories and instructions of the Lord and his great devotees. And if we just read, kind of understanding the characteristics of these devotees, we read through the lines a little bit, and we can see how they act and how they don't act, and try to apply it in our own life. So I was thinking, what does tolerance look like in my life? I don't feel any great harshness coming to me from people. I'm not so much in a position for that. So what is there for me to tolerate? You know, is it such a minuscule thing to have to tolerate? Or what does tolerating look like? And for me, it's not just withstanding. I don't feel so much criticism coming like Maharaj Parikshit might feel. But then I was thinking a little bit differently, and I was remembering that I was at the manor, staying for their sort of Bhakti Shastri, in-house Bhakti Shastri course a few years ago. And there was an intense schedule that I wasn't used to. Getting up early, the full days of service, and Bhakti Shastri class, and going to sleep and repeat. And some days, like, you have a Mangalarti suite transfer that starts at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's a whole thing. And when I got there, I was struggling, and I was told, but this feels discipline, and discipline will stay with you for your entire life, and it will nurture your Krishna consciousness throughout your life. Without it, it's very difficult to accelerate and advance in Krishna consciousness. And so I realized discipline is a form of tolerating, but it's a little bit different, that you're not tolerating a harsh circumstance with someone else. You're tolerating what's seemingly difficult for a better good. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, that which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. And I think that's a kind of tolerating that may be more relatable to some of us. Not just tolerating the unfortunate circumstances that may come out of the material nature, but tolerating what may taste like poison at first, but actually nectar, was actually good for us. And later when I was there, we had a similar discussion with another devotee, with the Brahmachari there. And he said, would you rather forbear the pain of discipline or suffer the pain of regret? And I was like, whoa, this is far out. But he was so right. But you know, what's worth it to tolerate? Either I tolerate something that's good for me, or I have to tolerate that pain of regret of what I didn't have. And then also Maharaj Parikshit shows how we can become more accepting of Krishna's plan. And it comes through faith, really. He had so much faith in Krishna, because Krishna saved them before he was born. And he knew that. He was always searching for Krishna. But he had this experience of Krishna that he couldn't necessarily remember, but he knew it happened to him. And through that experience, he was so strongly convinced that Krishna will protect him. And so how do we become more accepting of Krishna's plan? Well, how do we become accepting of anyone's plan? We have to have a little bit of trust in them. We need faith in that person, whether it's some kind of connection, relationship, or experience with a certain person that instills faith in us. And then, ultimately, we end up having faith. And so that starts with how Maharaj Parikshit showed how we wanted to learn about Krishna. It starts with hearing, with Shravanam, learning about a certain person, creating experiences, bhakti experiences, which instill faith, which we feel Krishna's presence more in my life, more in our lives. And in that case, then becoming accepting of Krishna's plan becomes second nature, because we're so intimately connected with him more and more. We trust him more and more. We feel a presence of him in our life, just like Maharaj Parikshit did. So through this tolerating, he was able to become more accepting. And I think the same thing can be done with us. And yeah, that's the glorious life of Maharaj Parikshit. And he exemplified so much that we can learn from his Vaishnavas. And I think even turned a misunderstanding, a common misunderstanding that can happen to all of us, into something so great for him. Even though he made a mistake, he accepted what happened to him with glory and grace. And he just took it as Krishna's plan. I just want to give the last few minutes to the appearance day of Sri Jagadish Pandit. I spoke a little bit this morning after Mangal Arati, but I'll just say a few more things. Hopefully it doesn't overlap with what was already said. I was thinking, since it's the appearance day of a great Vaishnava, it's such a great opportunity to speak on them. And especially when it's a Vaishnava that's a little bit lesser known, such as Jagadish Pandit. I didn't know anything about him until yesterday, really, but there's so many beautiful pastimes with him, and he was so intimately connected with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagannath Mishra and the family. But when there's the opportunity to speak on Vaishnavas, I think everyone's ears kind of turn towards and everyone's eyes light up. So there's something so sweet about hearing Krishna Katha and Vaishnava Katha. And it also gives us inspiration to serve Vaishnavas when we hear glorification in general. And that mentality of criticism that was mentioned a little earlier about Shrinki, that mentality tends to shrink. We tend to get a habit of hearing about someone and thinking well of them. And that happens when we hear Vaishnavas. So just a few words on Jagadish Pandit. In Krishna Leela, Krishna's coward boyfriends said, "Oh, Krishna, you have this, you can kill all these demons and do so many wonderful things. How about you can get us something to eat because you're really hungry?" So he says, "Okay, fine, go to the brahmanas." There's a group of brahmanas doing a yajna, and ask them for some foodstuffs, but they're very into their yajna, and they can't even utter the name Krishna and Balaram. They just say it's for on behalf of charity of Balaram. And maybe they'll give something. So the boys go in the bag, and nothing. They don't give anything. They don't even recognize. They go back empty-handed. And it's not, that's the nature of a beggar. Sometimes you give, sometimes you get, sometimes you don't. Try the wives of the brahmanas. So he goes, the group of the boys go, and they ask the wives of the brahmanas. So Krishna and Balaram, they're requesting that we get them something to eat. And just so much out of love. They get everything they have. And they bring it to them. They want to see Krishna and Balaram. So much love was there, and that was showing the difference of the wives of the brahmanas' affection for Krishna and Balaram compared to the smarter brahmanas. So if you fast forward now to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lila, we see those wives of the brahmanas take birth as Jagadish Pandit and Hiranya, brothers. And this is stated in Gauranga Deshdipika. The wives of the sacrificing brahmins in Braj took birth as Jagadish and Hiranya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked for and ate their prasad on the Ekadashi day. And simultaneously, there's something else about their origin, and that's, it says in Braj, there's a dancer named Chandrahasa, who was very expert in the tasting of rasa. In Chaitanya Leela, he also became Jagadish Pandit, who also took great pleasure in dancing for the Lord. And so, they lived very nearby, Pachimata and Jagannath Mishra, they were neighbors, and they're close family friends, very close friends. And his wife's name was Dukini. Jagdish and Dukini live nearby. And one day, Nima, who had this way of spreading Sankirtan even as a little boy, wouldn't stop crying until everyone around him was chanting the holy names. So this was a common occurrence, but one day he just wouldn't stop crying, even though they kept chanting. And Sachimata and Jagannath Misha were chanting the names in the usual way, and they became very confused and anxious. And so they desperately asked him, "What do you want? What do you want? What can we give you to stop crying?" And so Nima answered, "Today, they," meaning Jagadish and his wife, "have made a rice offering to Vishnu in his house. I want to eat some of that prasadam. Give me that prasadam and I'll stop crying." And so frantically, Jagannath Mishra was so amazed to hear this. He goes, well, he was thinking, first of all, how can they make rice in a cottage? That's not proper. But I want to make him stop crying, so I'm going to go anyways. So he immediately went to his neighbor's house, and he was surprised to see there was a large offering of rice being offered to Vishnu. So Jagannath Mishra told Jagadish Pandit of Nima's request, and even though he was worried about him eating rice in the Kadasi, but Jagadish Pandit, he knew that this was Krishna in the form of Nima. He was hungry. This was the object of his worship, and so he gave that. This is a sweet pastime, just like the wives of the Brahmanas gave prasadam to Krishna and Balaram. And that same Leela kind of transfers over to Nimai. And then later in his life, Jagadish Pandit, he was sent by Lord Chaitanya before Mahaprabhu took sannyas to go to Nilachal, Jagannath Puri, and preach there, to spread the holy names there, to spread the Sankirtan movement there. And so he got there and he became so in love with Lord Jagannath. And when he left, he was really, really distraught. Like very, very distraught. And so much separation. And this was noticed by Lord Jagannath. And so Lord Jagannath saw him crying so much, he appeared to him in a dream. And he told him, "You know, I'll come with you back to where you're going. Come back and I'll come with you." At the same time, he went in a dream with to the king of Orissa, Maharaj Pratap Rudra, and ordered him at the time that the Navakalevara is happening. And every 12 years, they replace the deity of Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, and they replace the prana, the life force, so to say, of the deity. And then the old deity they put into samadhi, and it's known as the samadhi stav vigraha. And that's the ritual. It's always been happening. But he said, this time, when this Navakalevara happens, take the wooden deity of Jagannath and it's changed. The outgoing form is supposed to be put into samadhi. Give that to Jagadish Pandit. And this is a big deal because tradition doesn't get changed, but Lord Jagannath himself came and gave his instruction. And so a big festival was held. It was a very glorified occasion. It was really momentous. And when Jagadish came back, he prayed to Lord Jagannath, "How can I carry you? It takes so many people to bring you from your temple room to the street, and you want me to go all the way back to West Bengal carrying you? And I'm an old man. What am I going to do?" And he said, "No worries. I'll become light as a cork, and you just carry me with a staff, with a stick." So everyone was amazed at his feat. And Jagadish made arrangements and brought him back, and the deity stopped at the town of Chakdaha, which is, I think, in West Bengal, sort of close to the Krishnanagar, Mayapur area. And that deity is still there. And actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, they both visited that temple at that small village called Jeshur. And they visited on two occasions because they were so attracted by his devotion, Jagadish Pandit's devotion. And they were so much appreciated his service and his wife's service. And they both went there, they took prasadam, they had, you know, kirtan. And as the Lord was about to leave to go to Puri, Nupini, the wife, she began to cry. And so he gave this deity of Gaura Gopal. That deity is still there in that place. And so I thought it was so nice to hear a story of a lesser known, at least to me, associate of Mahaprabhu. But there's so many wonderful pastimes that you may not know of. And there's so many glories of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyways, thank you. Are there any questions? I think we still have a few minutes.
Thank you for the nice class. And did you ever consider that Maharaj Parikshit had ample time to cool down his temper, turn around, take off the snake from Shami Kurishi's neck, and maybe apologize to him? Or, well, of course he was in front, right? But I mean, do you think that's a consideration?
Yeah,
because really it started from that, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely sometimes in like novels and things, they may have like expansion packs that say alternative endings or something like that. There's so many alternatives that could have happened in this scenario. It definitely would have changed the course of so many things. And the only reason why it didn't has to just be for Leela, for the sake of the propagation of Srila Bhagavatam to continue. But yeah, there's definitely ample time for that. There was also a position for him to retract the curse. There's ample time for Sringi. For so many scenarios that could have happened, but somehow by Krishna's will, everything went in a certain way that this whole story took place. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Ram Govindaji, for such a nice class. I thought another angle to see, actually, is that in one sense, Maharaj Parikshit acted same as Sringi, or Sringi acted as Maharaj Parikshit in one sense. Mm-hmm. Maharaj Parikshit was disturbed because of hunger, thirst, and fatigue, and then he misunderstood Samakurishi, and then he reacted. Sringi, he heard the news by his friend, and he was disturbed, and he misunderstood, and he reacted. So it seems like both were did the same in some sense. But the main difference I see is that Sringi overreacted, overdid everything. Plus harsh speech. One thing was the harsh speech was there. Because Maharaj Parikshit also reacted, and he just threw a dead snake, you know. He reacted. But he not only did harsh speech, which is so extreme, and then what to speak about cursing him, which was way extreme. Mm-hmm. But it seems like, as like the point you were saying, there's so much misunderstanding within our circle.
Yeah.
Misunderstanding you see, and the reaction and everything, but that was an extreme situation. And I think in one of the purports, Prabhupada writes that when Sringi came back and to see his father, he started crying. And then Prabhupada writes that he was releasing all his emotions, for he was unhappy that what he had done.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was, so in some sense, he also, quite remember something to that extent, saying that he released his emotions because he could see he had done so.
Yeah,
that's wrong. So anyway, that's some thought that came to my mind.
Yeah, they both, you're right, he overreacted. I think the magnitude of his reaction was so much greater. But also, it shows that the maturity was, Sringi was still immature and young. And Maharaj Parikshit was very, very mature. So that's the difference in the kind of reaction that was there, and also the acceptance of it on Maharaj Parikshit's side later. It showed the maturity of him that he had.
Sringi was just a kid. There's a question over here.
Oh, yes, my mother has it.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the nice talk. I was thinking about the point of tolerance, and when you were saying sometimes we might feel like, you know, we're in a comfortable situation and we don't really have a lot to tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way I understood it. And I was thinking that's why it's important to kind of push ourselves out of our comfort zone.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it can be that, you know, like I'm in a nice place, everybody knows me, everybody thinks this way of me, and you know, so like one example would be taking responsibility, you know, like being in charge of something.
Yeah.
And then especially if you're like in a little bit of a management position, then you'll see and you'll experience people but it's good, it's healthy, because then it's a good way for me to like test myself and see, am I really as calm and peaceful as I think I am.
That's a really good point, actually, because it can be a little bit of a guiding measure. If I don't have much to tolerate, then maybe I should be doing more. Thank you, Mother Francis.
I don't know if it's late, but I mean, you know, my other people was talking about the back and forth. I mean, Srini was just a kid.
Yeah.
And Maharaj Pariksit could have just zapped the guy and move on. I mean, it's just some little kid, you know, shooting his mouth off. But, you know, Maharaj Pariksit just, well, what the heck? There's an arrangement.
Yeah.
I'm going to go find Sukadeva Swami and Maharaj.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, you might have said it. I actually had a dream that I had about this class, yet it was raised by somebody else.
It showed where the mindset was. Of my Krishna. His mindset was so much on Krishna already. It's almost like he took it as an excuse.
You know, like a lot of it, which is fine, because that's, you know, but our Krishna was like, whatever. The kid was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that, now I'm in trouble. And he would get the Bhagavatam.
He was ready, my Krishna was ready to take a little, any excuse to just go to Krishna.
Yeah, like,
it was like, here we go.
It's
true, thank you. That's probably
nice.
Thank you.
I see another way to look at it, that between Singhi and Maharaj Pariksit, what relevant to our life, where do we draw our happiness in existence? If I give a good class, everybody likes it, am I drawing from that, or am I pleasing Krishna? That is natural and there is no problem. Maharaj Pariksit, he was drawing his happiness not from ruling kingdom or ruling anything or trying to punish someone, because you will see no achari actually say anything wrong he did of the snake, that snake around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the incident took place. Yes. But which acharya really blamed King Parikshit? None, including Prabhupada. So, because he was drawing happiness from Krishna, not from somebody in a kingdom, supply my demand, I wanted water, he didn't give. He was not drawing happiness from me. But Sringi was drawing happiness from his own power. I'm going to show you. He was not drawing happiness from connection with Brahma. He had a Brahma vidya, but he was not drawing happiness. This is relevant to our life too. In management we can, or whatever our day-to-day relationship with the devotees, as long as I don't draw happiness from non-devotional, then it's a problem. I mean, if we draw happiness from inner connection with Krishna, Salvini, then it's okay. There will be some challenges. It's nothing wrong. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada had this many. I can tell you some examples. Even Prabhupada said to Amarendra Prabhu that he comes here, Prabhupada's disciple.
Mm-hmm.
He said, he said, the highest happiness you can draw from chanting and dancing with the devotees' association. But sometimes it's difficult to tolerate devotees' association. But you must learn how to tolerate.
Thank you. And on that point, it's that Sringi, he said he drawed his happiness from his own a bit from his own ability, from his own so-to-state power. But where did that take him? Just after he was upset and crying to his father. And because we are flawed by nature, and we are our senses are imperfect, so how can drawing happiness with imperfect senses produce perfect happiness? It won't. But just like Krishna Maharaj, he drew his happiness from the supreme perfect, Krishna. And therefore, his happiness is eternal and perfect. So thank you.
There's one online question from G.A. Says, we are duty-bound to notice when a devotee is off-center in his or her words or action. How does one know when to tolerate and when to attempt to correct the devotee? The question is, we are duty-bound to notice when a devotee is off-center in his or her words or actions. How does one know when to tolerate and when to attempt to correct the devotee?
Yeah, it's
Ashwin. That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. We're prone to notice things. When do we tolerate? When do we point things out? I think it's a very, it's an important question that's very circumstantial, really. I think it also depends on factors like your relationship with the person that you have. Are you in a position to correct? Would correcting benefit you or benefit the other person? Certain check marks like this that kind of, you know, is this the right thing to do? Would I check off these points? Or am I causing more trouble by doing this? Am I doing it for my own sense gratification, show my own pride? Or am I doing it for the actual concern of the other person? So just kind of checks and balances for yourself. A little bit of introspection might help in that regard. Yeah, thank you. Okay, thank you, Ashwin Bhagavatam.